Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
Some Christians wonder if boycotting businesses is really biblical, and that's a fair question. Ed Vitagliano and M.D. Perkins address that subject in depth in the AFA Cultural Institute video, Stewardship in Action, The Power of the Boycott. They share the purpose of boycotts and show how they can impact the culture. We're giving that DVD to you free as our thanks for supporting AFA this month. Go to AFA.net today for more details. AFA.net.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Well, it is Tuesday, September 30th, and there is a looming midnight deadline for the government to actually pass a continuing resolution to avoid a shutdown, where Vice President J.D. Vance says the government is likely headed into a shutdown after Trump meets with Democrats yesterday. So this coming from Fox News, Republican and Democratic congressional leaders left a meeting with President Donald Trump with no deal to avert a government shutdown as the deadline fast approaches. Leaders met with Trump on Monday for roughly an hour to negotiate a path forward to avert a partial government shutdown, but it appeared neither side was willing to budge from their position. Vice President J.D. Vance said after the meeting, quote, "I think we're headed into a shutdown because the Democrats won't do the right thing. I hope they change their mind. If you look at the original they did with this negotiation, it was a $1.5 trillion spending package, basically saying the American people want to give massive amounts of money, hundreds of billions of dollars to illegal aliens for their health care, while Americans are struggling to pay their health care bills." He also said that this was their initial foray into this negotiation. We thought it was absurd. So Speaker Johnson also made demands of Chuck Schumer and others. This is what he had to say after that meeting yesterday. This is cut two.
This is very important on health care. Their counterproposal, what Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries are demanding, is that they claw back the $50 billion that we put into the rural hospital support structure. They want to take that back. We're not going to do that. We passed that because we have to allow for that. Also, if they shut the government down, not only are troops unpaid, federal workers, and all the services that everybody relies upon, but the WIC program, the nutrition program, women, infant, and children, they will not get that program, will not be funded. FEMA won't be funded. We have hurricanes off the coast of the United States right now. This is serious business. You have telehealth, you have mental health services, all that that's funded by the government would stop if Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries and the Democrats have their way. The Democrat shutdown would be damaging for the country. We can't allow for it.
All right. Well, let's welcome in Tommy Aylo, the Senior Director of Government Affairs at the National Taxpayers Union. So, Tommy, are Schumer and the Democrats being completely unreasonable?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me. They're being 100% unreasonable. And it's really unfortunate because that means the government's going to shut down in just a few hours. And the way I look at it is we all want a more nimble, efficient, smaller federal government. But the way we get there isn't through a government shutdown. You laid out that clip of Speaker Johnson saying everything that happens when the government shuts down, it really helps no one. No one wins in a government shutdown. I would really hope that they would change course for the, you know, for the betterment of the country. But it seems like they really want to play hardball and show to their base that they're willing to fight President Trump. But unfortunately, the American people will be collateral damage.
Yeah. And, you know, it seems to me, though, when we're looking at government shutdowns, and this isn't the first time, obviously, that depending on who's in the majority, Republicans have a different view on this, because I'm old enough to remember when there was a call for the shutdown, even, you know, a few years ago when Biden was in office and the Democrats had the majority. Republicans were basically saying, you know, not in the same messaging points, but basically this is just super dozing because non-essential services are the only thing that gets shut down. Everything essential is still funded. So what does it matter? And it, you know, we don't have to avoid a shutdown because we want to make sure that our priorities go through. And so it seems a little bit confusing here, depending on maybe who's in power.
Yeah, unfortunately, Washington is a very political place, right? So both sides will try and use government shutdowns to their political advantage. You know, the data shows that the groups that want to shut the government down are typically blamed for government shutdowns, believe it or not. And the American people really look unkindly on people that want to shut the government down. Now, look, there's ways to have disagreements about different priorities in the federal budget that goes through the negotiating process during the appropriations process. What the Democrats are asking for here is they want $1.5 trillion worth of spending in order to keep the government open for 7 weeks. It's absolutely ridiculous. They have these short-term ideas that'll cost the government lots of money over the long term. So it's really not fair to shoulder that burden for taxpayers just to keep the government open for 7 weeks. You know, I really do think the reasonable position is just a short-term continuing resolution, allow Democrats and Republicans to continue to negotiate for how we fund the government over the next year. I don't think that's something controversial. And again, I think it's something 65 to 70% of the American people would actually support. And unfortunately, Democrats are on the other side of it on that issue yet again.
And I'm speaking to Tommy Aiello, who is the Senior Director of Government Affairs at the National Taxpayers Union. And the House did pass its funding bill, a clean bill, which extends funding that would extend funding until just before Thanksgiving, giving both sides the opportunity to have that further negotiation, as you mentioned. And Speaker Johnson was on CNN yesterday talking exactly about that clean bill and saying that there's nothing partisan about it. So listen to what he had to say. This is cut three.
There is nothing partisan about this continuing resolution. Nothing. We didn't add a single partisan priority or policy rider at all. We're operating completely in good faith to give more time. The only thing that would gut health care, using his own phraseology there, is if we took Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer's demand here, because they want to cut $50 billion from rural hospitals. That's the new fund that we added in the big, beautiful bill, the working families tax cuts that we passed just a couple months ago. They want to gut that. They also want to hold up all this funding that I listed. I mean, the WIC program is something that we all champion for women, infants, and children nutrition. That would be held up. So it's exactly the opposite of what Hakeem is talking about. The Obamacare subsidies is a policy debate that has to be determined by the end of the year, December 30th, not right now, while we're simply trying to keep the government open so we can have all these debates.
All right. So, Tommy, so the primary focus now is the Senate, and this sounds reasonable from Speaker Johnson. So will Schumer continue to filibuster in the short term spending deal or force a shutdown tonight? What's the projection?
I think he will 100% force a shutdown tonight. And again, it's just unfortunate. It doesn't have to be this way. There's actually also potentially going to be a vote on another bill called the Prevent Government Shutdowns Act by Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, a really strong pro-taxpayer conservative, that essentially eliminates future government shutdowns by saying anytime there's a lapse in appropriations, we just move to a clean CR and it has to be voted on every 2 weeks. So it's a much better alternative than the system we have now, where we have to think, is the government going to shut down? What do we have to give Democrats in order to come to the table? Senator Johnson's bill takes all of that off the table. Anytime there's a lapse in appropriations, we just go straight to a continuing resolution without a vote. So it's a much better alternative. Look, government shutdowns, they're so wasteful. We pay bureaucrats to stay home and not work. We have our troops on the streets or abroad working and not getting paid.
And we have all these energy projects that won't get permitted because there's no one working to approve them. It's such an inefficient process. We think Senator Johnson's alternative is a much better alternative than the status quo.
Yeah. And so, you know, so practically speaking, I mean, if this happens tonight, this obviously wouldn't be the first government shutdown that that we've had in even recent memory. And so what's the likelihood of how long term that would be? And would this play to the Democrats' base unfavorably? Because it seems like the Republicans, including Speaker Johnson, Vice President Vance and Trump and others, even the press secretary yesterday was suggesting that, you know, the Democrats will be responsible for some of these welfare programs that they're so in favor of being put on hold temporarily and not really serving their base.
I think Senator Schumer is very afraid of a primary challenge from a progressive in 2028, and he needs to show his base, both in New York and across the country, that they're willing to stand up to President Trump no matter what. You know, these things in the past were usually non-controversial. Unfortunately, everything has become so politicized. And, you know, I would just say, if when there's a government shutdown, things don't really change so much on a daily basis until about 1 to 2 weeks in. So even for people that are receiving these healthcare programs, or maybe they're a federal worker, you know, nothing is really going to change so much right away. It's really once you reach that 1.5 to 2 week mark that things really take a turn, because that's when, you know, if you're a federal worker, you would receive a paycheck, and you don't receive the paycheck, there's still enough funding really for some of these programs to continue for a few days. But it's really that 1.5 to 2 week mark. And that's what I'm looking at. If it extends more than a week, I think it could really cause some trouble in the American economy. Not so much trouble, but just a little bit to impact job figures, GDP, and potentially inflation as well. And I think financial markets, they understand that as well, which is why you don't really see the stock market and our 401ks freaking out right away. I think it's really that 1.5 to 2 week mark we should all be keeping our eyes on.
Interesting. And do you think that the 1 to 2 week mark is where the target negotiation projection is, or do both sides actually understand that, you know, that's kind of the demarcation? And really, even if, you know, Schumer's talking tough right now and Hakeem Jeffries, they know that that's kind of as far as they could practically extend it.
You know, I think it's possible this shutdown could extend longer than people anticipate, because Republicans, they're not moving, right? They want a clean CR. They've been very clear about that. It seems like they're not going to negotiate. The Democrats, they want something in return in order for their votes. It doesn't seem like Chuck Schumer is going to fold easily. I think if there is a path forward to, on a short-term funding deal, it would have to be a handful of Senate Democrats, between 7 or 8 of them, bucking party leadership and saying, you know, we don't like this we don't like the strategy National Democrats are proceeding with. We want to be the adults in the room, fund the government. I think that's how we see a path forward through this negotiation and the process, is if you have a handful of Democrats in the Senate buck Chuck Schumer and actually do something on their own. It's very possible, but we'd have to see. There's another vote today on the CR, so we'll have to see if which Democrats might cross over.
And I'm speaking with Tommy Aiello, the Senior Director of Government Affairs at the National Taxpayers Union. And, you know, we're talking all about this clean bill and the Democrats are pushing back on it. And yet, I mean, you can't get better than nonpartisan. And yet the Democrats always push for more. Why don't Republicans do the same thing? I mean, I'm honestly kind of frustrated. It's like, if the Democrats are going to push for the government shutdown anyway, why doesn't Speaker Johnson and especially the Senate put something in there that's at least a Republican priority? It seems like Republicans are way too quick to say, hey, nothing partisan here. I mean, I thought we had the trifecta.
We do have the trifecta, right? And I think the bill that the House passed, and when Republicans did their job, that was blessed by the administration. So they wanted to do something that the administration wanted to do, right? We see that all the time. That's not really a concern. I think when we say we have a trifecta, we have to remember, right, we can't do anything in the Senate if we don't have 60 votes. And that makes things extremely difficult for accomplishing President Trump's priorities. You know, we did the one big, beautiful bill. That's the working families tax cuts. We were able to circumvent the filibuster through a special Senate process, which is a very good thing because it means Democrats couldn't filibuster a $5 trillion tax cut. Now, the appropriations process is still working its way through. So once we actually find a path forward on a continuing resolution, then we can actually get to the business of funding the government for the next year and hopefully take another government shutdown off of the table. These appropriations processes, that's really where you see these conservative priorities and principles shine. You know, the House has passed a number of these that include so many important pro-taxpayer, pro-conservative, pro-family provisions. Those have all passed the House. They're still waiting for Senate action. Ideally, once we pass a CR, we'd be able to get to that business. And I think that's really where we'll see conservative policy continue to make its way to the president's desk.
Makes sense. All right. Well, Tommy, really appreciate it. You can follow the National Taxpayers Union on X. I'd encourage you to do that. And we'll see what happens. And we'll be following this story and, see if we have a government shutdown in the morning. But we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, President Donald Trump rolled out his comprehensive plan to end the Gaza conflict, and this was 21 points, and so I won't read all of it here, but you can go to Rapid Response 47 at Rapid Response 47 on X, and they have detailed this extensively. And it is a plan, though, to ensure that the end of the Gaza conflict actually takes place, including getting the hostages back. And as we are approaching the 2-year anniversary in just a little over a week of the terror attack on October 7th, which was of 2023, it is just horrific to think that there are still hostages that have yet to be returned. So is this plan going to work? Let's welcome in Scott Uhlinger. He's a former CIA officer and regular guest of the program. Scott, what did you think of the 21-point plan?
Well, I certainly think, Jenna, that it's impressive. And I think maybe the most notable thing about it is that basically all of the Arab countries are on board. Now, we haven't heard from Hamas yet, of course, but the fact that so many Egypt, Saudi Arabia, even places like Indonesia are supporting it is a good sign because and actually Qatar is also supporting it. And since they have been instrumental in supporting Hamas, this may mean that they will be putting the pressure on Hamas to accept the agreement. So I'm cautiously optimistic about that.
And of course, President Netanyahu had comments yesterday on it and seems to be, I think, very much in favor of this. So from Israel's perspective, do they have any concerns, at least that we're aware of, or disagreement points in the plan that President Trump has proposed?
No. I think that they may have slight beefs with small parts of it. But I guess the important thing about this plan is that it's kind of like a phased plan. It rolls out in different phases. And so the hostages have to be released within 72 hours, for example. And then based on different performance or obligations on the Israeli or the Palestinian side, then the other side will take the next step in this general agreement that you just spoke about. So the good thing is that if one side is resistant, then the other side could say, okay, well, look, you're violating what we did, what you said you would do. And so we're not going to, for instance, fully take out IDF troops out of Palestine until you comply with releasing the hostages, things like that. So I think that's a good way of doing it and a realistic way of doing it. And I think, and notably, the one thing that is maybe different about this is that, well, again, because Donald Trump did this, and that's the other thing I want people to understand, is I really think that this plan, as it is right now, it is impossible that anyone else could have done this except for Trump. And the only reason is because Trump is fairly well trusted by both sides. He's the only one who could have made this work by his force of personality. Because he's speaking like he's basically, let's say, sticking up for the Palestinians in front of the Israelis and sticking up for the Israelis in front of the Palestinians. So they, more than any human being in the world, they trust him more than anyone. And so that's kind of the basis for this understanding. Now, hopefully they will wind up accepting it. But God, but let's face it, Hamas also has a history of throwing sometimes incredibly good deals into the toilet because it seems like their priority is just to kill Israelis.
Yeah. And so, given that, how plausible do you think that this is for Hamas to want to have some kind of negotiated conclusion to the conflict that would require, frankly, a lot of concessions on their part and would, at least on the world stage, optically seem to grant not only President Trump, but also Israel a win?
Well, I think because I think the main part of the deal that strengthens it from the Arab point of view is the fact that the big debate was who's going to run this place? Certainly Israel, that's unacceptable. So, but the Palestinian Authority has been totally discredited as it deserves, and so that isn't viable either. So what Trump has proposed is a third way, and that is to have basically like an international body that would have some Palestinian participation, but would not be run by the Palestinians. And so that is the basis of support for the Arab world, because the Arab world would have participation in it as well, like Qatar and Saudi Arabia and stuff would be on the body that runs Gaza. And so they would maintain like some kind of say into what goes on there, which is kind of what they want. You know, what they don't want is they don't want Israel just running it and calling all the shots. So this avoids that problem. And by doing that, by sort of empowering the other countries, it has gained their support. And like I said, the good thing is that those countries, especially Qatar and who are instrumental in supporting Hamas, we know that they all, you know, they all reside in penthouses in Qatar, all the leadership, of course, that they will put a lot of pressure on Hamas and say, okay, look, you need to sign this thing and we need to get this thing going. So that's good. Also, Trump is they're looking at. See, another reason for that is because they understand that every time that it has been handed over to the Palestinian Authority or Hamas, because remember, Hamas and the Palestinian Authority hate each other, is that the brainwashing of the youth continues. Suicide bombers are rewarded. Children are trained to kill Israelis by the time they're 3 years old. And so that is something that's kind of addressed in this agreement to prevent that kind of brainwashing. Like, you know, it's like a denazification program and that denazification, so to speak, de-radicalization is one condition under which the Palestinians will be given more authority over themselves based on how they detox their educational system. So that's important. That's very important.
Well, it'll be really fascinating to see how all of this turns out. And I know that the White House at least would like a resolution to this, especially as the second anniversary of that horrific terrorist attack on Israel is coming up. And I'm speaking with Scott Uhlinger, who's a former CIA officer. And let's turn to another headline. This is coming from NBC News. The U.S. is preparing options for military strikes on drug targets inside Venezuela, sources say. So President Donald Trump has not approved any action yet, at least according to these reports. And the U.S. and Venezuela are talking through Middle Eastern intermediaries, sources told NBC News. So what's going on here?
Well, I guess what we have to understand is that something that we haven't heard much about is the threat of Venezuela. And the main reason is because Biden allowed an open border and didn't care about the drugs being imported into the country. It has, you know, basically become more apparent to the American people that that Venezuela is that it's a narco state, basically, that the leadership is fully in with the drug gangs in South America and is in and with things like Chinese, Russian, and even Iranian assistance is importing, is making sure that the drugs get imported to, into the United States to undermine their greatest threat, the United States. And so this becomes a national security issue, not just a law enforcement issue. And that's why, like, for instance, Trump is ordering justifiable military strikes on these drug smuggling boats. And so, but that, you know, that only deals with the symptom of the problem. But the problem is the leadership in Venezuela under Maduro. And it seems like it really is that he is absolutely in bed with the drug gangs, then he needs to go. You know, I mean, that is a direct, a much more direct national security threat to the United States than something like Iraq or Afghanistan ever was. So I think that, and I think that's the attitude that the Trump administration is taking.
And, you know, and that's really fascinating because, you know, when I was at least reading this article, and obviously I don't have the background and expertise that you do, and this is why, you know, your commentary is so valuable. I'm kind of thinking of this as, okay, that seems a little bit, you know, isolated in terms of like, okay, we're now going after Venezuela. But when you look at this kind of holistically, the players involved, the rationale, and then you look at what the Trump administration is wanting to do with border control, protection, enforcing law and order, ensuring that the fentanyl crisis gets resolved. I mean, all of these things are very interconnected.
Yeah, they very much are. And like I said, you know, for many, many years, this has been kind of swept under the carpet. Even I was less aware of some of this stuff. It's just because it was just swept under the carpet because the Biden administration and, let's say, Obama, they don't want to admit all this stuff. They don't want to admit that Venezuela is an active proxy on behalf of Russia, China, and Iran against the United States. And, you know, we're letting all these people in. And you know, how many of them are actually trained Venezuelan operatives? And by the way, there's also a lot of cases of Iranians being given Venezuelan passports, and how many of them were allowed into the United States under Biden. So you could have thousands of Islamic Revolutionary Guard, Iranian, basically, you know, Iranian special forces, basically allowed into the country by Biden. And, you know, and as he's become aware of this problem, I think Trump is getting maybe making a move to get rid of it. And it may come as a surprise to people, but he's not, I mean, I don't think President Trump, you know, the peacekeeping president, is not interested in starting a new war unless he, or a new, you know, whatever, destabilization in Venezuela, unless he thinks that the national security of the United States is in danger. So, you know, his record so far, you know, I'll support that. If we have to do something against Venezuela, I think it's only because it's appropriate. And they have access to information that we don't.
Yeah. And so with Venezuela acting as a proxy for some of these other powers that you're mentioning, like Russia, Iran, or even Hezbollah, would U.S. strikes risk triggering a proxy conflict or escalating tensions with those other groups? Or does this seem like it's leveraging Maduro against them?
Oh, I think that I don't think that Trump is going to shy away from anything based on the proxies, because what we've certainly learned with Iran, with Russia and China, is that these people are classic schoolyard bullies. They react to force. If you punch them in the nose, they do nothing. Look at what happened with Iran. All the big talk for many years, and oh, Iran was a great foe. They were humbled in 12 days. And it's the same thing with a Russia or anyone else. If you react forcefully, then they will dare not oppose us, because the bottom line is the United States is the most powerful military on earth. And what sometimes we lack is will. But if we show we have the will to do something, they are not going to stand up against us.
Yeah, well, really fascinating. And before I let you go, Scott Uhlinger, one other headline for you. So this is coming from USA Today. Hegg says mystery meeting in Quantico could cost millions, require unprecedented security. That's the focus of USA Today instead of actually the meeting itself. But this, you know, which just shows you their ridiculous way that they always want to poke at the Trump administration. I just think it's ridiculous, the fake news media, as Trump calls them. But this is a mysterious mass gathering that Secretary of War Pete Hegseth ordered last week, summoning hundreds of the top military commanders to Quantico, Virginia, today on September 30th. The Pentagon isn't really dropping hints about why. What do we know, or what's the speculation from your background experience?
This is pretty informed speculation, and also, you know, I'm on social media and certainly watching the postings of people like Cynical Publius, who's a retired Army colonel who's pretty hooked up. And by the way, people can follow me at Scott Uhlinger at the Station Chief on Twitter. But anyway, the main thrust, I think, of this, I'm 80 or 90% sure, is that this is basically reading the General Officer and Flag Officer Corps, the Riot Act, because basically the Department of Defense has not been actively complying with a lot of what Hegseth is ordering, which is absolutely unacceptable. For example, more than 2 months ago, the military said with the LGBT people, they will be discharged. They are not fit. They are not deployable, and they must be discharged. And yet we hear last week that an LGBT officer was promoted in the military. Okay, well, they're not even supposed to be there anymore. And so the bottom line is these combatant commanders are kind of just slow rolling reform. They're disobeying orders, and they need to be told that they will be immediately fired and discharged if they do not follow orders, because it's clear that this is the way it is. Unfortunately, we even saw with the Charlie Kirk assassination is that there were active duty military officers and enlisted who were happy, who were on social media celebrating his death, people in the U.S. military and having served 28 years in the Navy and the Naval Reserve. That is infuriating to someone like me, and it's unacceptable. And so this, all of the things I just talked about is fodder for discussion with these 900 flag officers who, frankly, they could get rid of half of them and probably improve operational readiness. The Navy has more admirals than ships. Now think about how absurd that is. So hopefully, I can only hope that Trump like basically fires at least one third of them in this meeting, but maybe that's hoping for too much.
That's exactly what I hope is going to happen. Wouldn't that be amazing? But Trump told NBC on September 28th, quote, "It's really just a very nice meeting, talking about how well we're doing militarily, talking about being in great shape, talking about a lot of good, positive things. It's just a good message." Well, I think a good, positive message would be, as you said, Scott, just, you know, getting rid of about a third of them, because, you know, all of the reasons that you just said, and how we need to get our military back in shape. But I guess we'll find out after today. But as you mentioned, Scott Uhlinger, you are on X. I actually didn't know that, so you have another follower now. I just followed you at the Station Chief. So if listeners are on X, I'd encourage you to go follow Scott Uhlinger at the Station Chief. And we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. I want you to picture this. Her name is Kayla. She is 17, alone, terrified, and pregnant, sitting in a clinic, tears blurring, thinking abortion is her only option, until she was offered a free ultrasound, paid for by a hero just like you. The moment Kayla heard her baby's heartbeat, the decision was made. And today, her little baby boy, Gabriel, is thriving because preborn walked with Kayla every step of the way. Now, multiply that by 38,000. That's how many babies preborn has helped save just this year. How many mothers preborn has come alongside with practical and spiritual resources to make motherhood possible. But here's the most important thing you will hear today. Their goal is to save 70,000 babies by the end of the year. And they can't do that without us. Every $28 provides that ultrasound, the moment everything changes. Will you be the reason the next Kayla chooses life? The reason Gabriel fulfills his destiny? To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or donate securely at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, as the evangelical world continues to process the death and assassination of Charlie Kirk, and we're seeing a lot of the effects of just the revival that is sweeping the country. There are a lot of different moving pieces, and this was a very interesting one that Daily Wire journalist Megan Basham posted yesterday. A Christian publishing company has offered to buy Christianity Today. She says, I have heard many Christians lament that CT Magazine has been captured by worldly ideology and wish someone would restore it to Billy Graham's intended purpose. Looks like Canon Press is trying to do exactly that. I obtained records this morning, this is yesterday, showing Canon put in a $10 million offer this morning to buy the magazine. In its offer letter, Canon specifically cites Charlie Kirk's spirit of evangelism as their motivation. We'll be monitoring for further developments. Then she goes on to say, so the question arises, what is CT Magazine worth? Is $10 million a fair offer? This can be hard to pin down given that it's a nonprofit media organization and the bulk of its funding has increasingly come from secular NGOs, not subscriptions. For example, according to IRS filings in 2020, only about 20% of CT's revenues came from grants. Today, it's more than half. In 2023, CT's net assets minus liabilities, were about $9.9 million. Given that it is a tarnished brand among much of its core audience and so much so it has gained popular nicknames like Christianity Astray, then that's actually a nice one, and its editorial reputation has taken a nosedive in recent years, $10 million doesn't seem like a bad opening offer. Well, let's welcome in Ryan Helfenbein, who is the Vice President for Communications at Liberty University and Executive Director of the Standing for Freedom Center, and importantly as well, is very connected within a big EVA circle. So, Ryan, this is a really fascinating development, I think. What's your take?
Well, I definitely think that Canon Plus has no shortage of things to make news about, and this is a brilliant move on their part, honestly, because if anybody's been watching the current spat between Christianity Today's editor-in-chief, Russell Moore, and then, of course, Doug Wilson and the Moscow boys, he recently had called them losers, and they had responded with a viral video. I mean, it went far and wide, basically pushing back on Russell Moore, showing the success that they've had with their media, with their church engagement, their CREC network, and all of it. They've done extraordinarily well reaching multi-generations from grandparents all the way down to young kids with all kinds of books, videos, movies, documentaries, all of it. And the Canon Plus app has been really successful. I just think this could be a stunt. We'll see what happens. You know, I'm certainly not a prophet here, but it would be interesting to see how they respond, how Christianity Today Ultimate responds to this. Because they are a C3, many of those financials are not going to be available to the public. One of the questions we've often had is, where are all the funding sources for Christianity Today? We ask that question because we know that they're not impacting grassroots evangelicals. We know that the broad mainstream of evangelicals in the United States, obviously conservative, Bible-believing, normie Christians, are not highly impacted by Christianity Today or the pieces that are coming out of there. They tend to, Jenna, appeal to people that live in deep blue cities, Nordic Christians, you know, maybe in Minnesota, maybe in New York, and scattered across the country, but definitely not a broad base appeal to your average evangelical that Charlie Kirk was so fond in reaching. And I think that's where we sit today.
Yeah, I think that's a great analysis. And, you know, like Meg Basham reports to me, I would put myself in that category of a reader of Christianity Today that kind of looks at it and sees a lot of it as very slanted, you know, kind of against the overall mission of the mainline evangelicalism that is trying still to promote the truth of the gospel of Christ. And a lot of these seem to be targeted hit pieces, quite frankly. And, you know, there are a couple of good journalists there still. You know, a few of them are friends of mine and, you know, people that I'll always give a quotation or, you know, something to because they're really, really good journalists. And so, you know, you can't overall just say the publication as a whole isn't worthy of being read or trusted. I mean, and that's true, frankly, I think for any publication. I mean, there are a couple of good people, yes, even at the New York Times or, you know, Rolling Stone or, you know, some of these others. It's kind of a person by person and the journalist that actually brings their own ethic into that publication. So I want to be clear about that. But I personally, Ryan, would really love to see Christianity Today as a publication that's actually uplifting the good work that true Bible-believing Christians are actually doing instead of having a lot of these pieces that are either hit pieces or they're just really off biblically and doctrinally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would seem as though that once upon a time when it was founded, and this goes back to Carl F. H. Henry, when Billy Graham had founded the magazine, he was its editor-in-chief. He was like the Bill Buckley of evangelicals. Carl Henry, that's probably one of the best way to describe him to a broader audience. But he was founded the National Association of Evangelicals. He's a founding faculty member at Fuller Seminary. Incredible mind, just extraordinary talent. And he really built that thing as an imprint. It was almost like a white paper, magazine. It was not something like we know today, but it was much more highbrow, robust theology, doctrine, that kind of thing. And it's changed. It's pivoted through the years, and more recently, I think even before Russell Moore got there, it was Mark Galley that wrote an article in 2019, you know, basically disparaging Trump and why he needed to be removed from office. This was in 2019. And this is in spite of all of the good that he was doing. He was just basically trying to draw a moral equivalency. Trump is terrible. This was what Mark Galley was saying, you know, in spite of the, you know, 200 plus federal judges that were put on the bench. He didn't care. And this, of course, invited the criticism of evangelical leaders all across the country who were basically saying, Mark, you're out of touch. What is Christianity Today doing? Even Franklin Graham, the son of the founder of Christianity Today, was very critical of Galley at the time, rightly so. And so they've only ever doubled down by hiring Russell Moore, and they continue to go in this direction. They are very nuanced when it comes to morality around sexual ethics, very nuanced about the LGBTQ plus identity movement. And why are they nuanced? Because they don't want to be pointed. They don't want to draw harsh, strict lines in the sand. They want to sort of be blasé about those issues. And then whenever they draw hard lines, it is only ever against conservative evangelical Christians. Because it largely exists as a leftist agitprop against the evangelical church in America.
Yeah, and I'm speaking with Ryan Helfenbein, who's the executive director of the Standing for Freedom Center and vice president of communications at Liberty University. You can follow him on X at Ryan Helfenbein. And, you know, another one of Meg's posts here on this issue, you were mentioning, you know, some of the financials and some other things, Ryan, and she posted this as well yesterday. This is interesting. In looking into Christianity Today's financials, I found that the MAG is now taking money from the Hewlett Foundation, a major supporter of Planned Parenthood, to cover U.S. elections. Seems like it would be much better to have Billy Graham's publication housed with a company like Canon Press that doesn't take dollars from abortion promoters. Well said. I mean, that's fascinating to me that a publication called Christianity Today would be taking money from the same foundation that provides so much to Planned Parenthood. I mean, that seems to be very much a conflict of interest, at least with the expectation of its general audience of readers.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think there was a study just a couple of years ago, there's the number of people on their staff that were contributing to Democrats. I don't think they had anybody on staff that was contributing to Republicans. You know, that is sort of the epitome of what we're talking about, that you have money coming from a foundation clearly in support of abortion, but also electioneering. Why would they be giving that to Christianity Today? I think it's obvious because the idea is to suppress the vote. The idea is to put a damper on Christian political engagement. You don't want evangelicals going out in droves voting for conservatives, voting for Republicans. And so an imprint like Christianity Today might have influence in sort of fitting the bill, if you will, renting an evangelical. You know, let's have Christianity Today do the work of People for the American Way, Norman Lear's organization. The entire purpose of that culturally was to smuggle in liberalism into the main of American civic life, going back to the 1960s. And we see that David French and Russell Moore are part of that same project today. And so Rob Reiner is now at the helm. He was Meathead, going back to All in the Family, a show that Norman Lear produced in the 1970s. So this has a history. The left literally has captured some of our evangelical institutions. National Association of Evangelicals, sadly, I mean, it's got some good people in it, but it's not really a conservative organization anymore. That was another one that Carl Henry founded as well. So we got our work cut out for us, Jenna. I hope that Canon buys it. I really do, because I think that would obviously give us a respite and a relief from some of the stuff that Christianity Today is putting out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, it's hard enough with all of the left wing and mainstream media that come after Christians and, you know, try to undermine our promotion of the truth of the gospel of Christ. We don't need publications that are ostensibly Christian I mean, it would be great to have kind of a mainline known national publication that has some good backing and good funding and a different kind of mission. So I'm with you. When I saw that, I thought, you know, that's hopefully a fair offer in terms of valuation. I have no idea, but, you know, seems to be reasonable and hopefully at least a starting point. But I would love to see that. And this raises kind of, in just, you know, the last minute or so we have with you, Ryan, this raises kind of a broader question, though, about how we as Christians treat media that is supposedly on our side. And I think it's incumbent upon all of us to take some of these things with a little bit of grain of salt when there are hit pieces against known Christians, to kind of just say, well, wait a minute, I don't want to just assume the worst of my fellow brothers or sisters in Christ and make sure that this isn't something that's just targeted by, you know, or funded by, you know, an organization that is giving money to Planned Parenthood, for example. I mean, I think with it, we need to have more discernment as Christians, mm-hmm. even in what we're reading.
Yeah, there's a lot of polling and data out there that trust in these institutions, trust in the media is at an all-time low. We've kind of been trained more recently, and I say more recently in the past 5, 10, 15 years, to be very cynical. And what is the viewpoint discrimination of that particular group? What are they? Where are they coming from? What are they writing about? What's their ideological bent? What's the worldview? What is the motivating factor? You know, everything has a bias. I just prefer the bias to come from Christians and conservatives, and I want that bias. And actually, that bias, I have a bias towards the truth. Yes. I just want the truth. So if people will give it to me plain and straight, that's what we need in America today. And hopefully we can recapture Christianity today.
Yeah. Amen to that. Well, Ryan, always appreciate your commentary. You can follow Ryan Helfenbein at rhelfenbein. And you can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at afr.net. We'll see you tomorrow morning. See if the government shut down. You know, we'll see. Have a great day.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.